ladies and gentlemen, not boys and girls, welcome to the American Pale Males podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Michael, and with me is the other host of the show, Jeremy.
It's me.
Sorry, I just like stomped all over your intro.
Thank you, Michael. If you're going to lead with the ladies and gentlemen, you really should follow it up with children of all ages.
Right.
But
well, the problem is children shouldn't drink beer.
Well, I know, but they can still listen to us carry on. There's nothing illegal about that. Our specific brand is family-friendly, I guess, technically.
according
to the bylaws of iTunes and, iTunes. It seems like we're technically okay for kids.
Yeah, technically.
Play this for your kid, Michael. You have a kid.
I do. She would probably get bored.
Yeah, probably.
Very quickly.
I mean, I can start making noises like a bird or something like that, but my throat's a little raw. I don't really want to do it.
Okay.
Enough hooey and applesauce, as a wise man once said. Michael, what do you got for a beer brag this week?
I have two beers that I want to talk about, but they're quick because they're not really brags. They're just beers that I had that fit the season of summer very well. One was Potosi Riverside Radler.
Interesting.
So this is a first Radler I've had in a while.
Going back on a theme of the fruited beers, Michael.
Right. Well, both these kind of fit our Sumerian summer series, so
I forgot about that.
which we're continuing today in the FDR.
Indeed, we are. That's later.
Yes, this was a grapefruit Radler, and it pretty much did not have any beerosity to it. It was, it was just fine, but I wouldn't classify it as a beer. I mean, obviously they call it a Radler, so.
Well, sure.
But you know what I mean.
It's, technically it's just, juice.
Yeah, more juice and fruit than beer, so.
Mm-hmm.
Fine beverage, but really not what I'm looking for. The other one was really interesting. It's Stone Soup from New Glarus Brewing Company, and this is one of their new offerings.
I was going to say, I hadn't heard of this one
yet. I believe it's a seasonal. Yeah, yeah. It was interesting. The main flavor, actually really the only flavor, was yeast.
Woohoo.
It was just like kind of a yeast bomb on the palate. The malts are very weak. I mean, they impart mouthfeel, but they really don't have a strong flavor on their own. And there's pretty much no hop flavor, like distinguishable hop flavor to speak of. There's probably some in there. So it's kind of refreshing in that regard. And I really like yeast flavor is one of my favorite flavors in the spectrum of beer.
Sure.
So I like that, but there was really nothing to like counterbalance that or lean that against. So I probably wouldn't reach for this one, but if like it was available somewhere, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll have that one again. So, but it was an interesting beer, something that I've really never had quite like before.
Passes the cooler test, if not the six-pack test.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly. So one to maybe try if you're able to get your hands on it.
All right.
Across the border.
Michael, I have fulfilled a weeks-long quest. I don't know how long we've been threatening to do this. If the listeners will remember, a few weeks back, a month back, I don't know. This summer's been a bit of a mess for me.
like sand through the hourglass.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Yes.
We talked about that Serious Eats article about infusing beer with various flavors, and fill-in host of the show, Steve, I guess. Panic. Last minute edition? I don't know. you guys did it with the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and grapefruit and ginger, correct?
Right, and then we also did another one, too. The mango version.
The mango one, yeah. Well, I did the better one.
Right.
So just...
Which one is that?
Just a couple hours ago, I broke out an old Rasputin. I got the oak chips out of the closet, and I ground up a little bit of dark roast coffee. And
that's right. You said you were going to do this.
Dios
mio. I need to hear. Success?
Oh, boy. Did keep a control sample.
Oh, yes. That's very important.
So, 3/4 cup of old Rasputin, 1/8 cup of French oak chips, medium toast, and about a tablespoon's worth of coarsely ground coffee thrown in the French press. A couple of minutes, 3-4 minutes, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then dumped out into a small tasting glass with the non-steeped version side by side. And the steeped version is better.
Mmm. Now, here's the fact that mine lost carbonation.
It did.
Did yours as well?
Yes, it did.
But that for a stout
not
type,
as important.
Exactly. I think that's key.
It's still noticeable. It is achy.
Okay.
It's still noticeable, and it is a little weird. I believe, who was it? What company was it that had the forest version? The thing that inspired it, was it Dogfish Head?
Oh gosh. Oh yeah, the like their little rig they made.
The rig that like forced.
I want to say it was Dogfish Head.
I think it's Dogfish. For the sake of
like
argument,
the
we'll do that.
Or, yeah, something. Yeah.
It's like something like the enamel animal or something. I just looked at the recipe a couple hours ago, but I suspect theirs has some way of like, you know, forcing carbonation into it.
Pressured.
So it's just like, all right, well, whatever. But in our lame homebrew hack sort of way of doing it.
Yeah.
it's intense because so the oak chips, when we did it for the coffee and whiskey porter last year, I don't remember. We soaked the oak chips in Jack Daniel's or whatever whiskey Crown Royal because Steve doesn't drink liquor anymore. And it's probably the same bottle of Crown Royal he's had since before he and his wife were married. But we soaked it in the Crown Royal, and then we threw the chips in the tank and let that secondary for a while. But with this, it just said, just throw it all in there, let it go for 3 minutes. The oak didn't really come through as much as I had anticipated. I suspect with a longer steep it would have. But
okay.
I used a French roast coffee that we have laying around here. And my God. Having a fresh smack of coffee in an Imperial Stout has to be tried. Next time you're in town, we're doing this.
So the coffee was the predominant
flavor,
but also a very good flavor.
Very good flavor, and it's weird because you still got the roast out of the roast of the coffee complements the roast of the beer of the malts rather incredibly well, as one might expect.
Does the flavor differ from a coffee stout then significantly, would you say? Is it kind of a different spin on that?
It does, because I feel like with a coffee stout, the flavor is more integrated into the malts, the malt profile,
right.
Whereas this is just like, it's like, oh snap, that is coffee in there, as opposed to that kind of tastes like coffee.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
The only reason why I say I like it more is just because I'm a big fan of dark coffee, like a really big fan of dark roast coffee, and this blend worked out really well. I really enjoyed it.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to try that. Obviously, you got your oak chips at a craft brewing store, so
and we still have a lot left.
Yeah, so I could do that, but I would like to try the coffee. Even by itself, that seems very appealing. So
I'm tempted to try the coffee with like a golden ale.
Oh, just to like see what happens?
Yeah, kind of? Yeah, pretty much. Or like in Portland, I had that cold press IPA.
Yeah, there's those weird golden looking beers, but have a robust coffee
the
flavor.
The Schlafly one comes to mind.
Not
enough for me to remember its name. Double Bean, that's what it was.
Okay.
I suspect coffee and vanilla would work really well together.
Yeah, I might have to get a 6-pack of some rando stout and then just try different fusions with that.
So the only caveat I would have to that is I would say get a heavier stout than a Sierra Nevada. Something that's like at least 7% because it takes a lot of malt to stand up to dark coffee. I suspect if you had a lighter stout, it would probably be a little bit more finicky when it comes to the ratios.
Okay. Could be a little overpowering.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, I'll put that on my docket, my infinity docket. another gem.
Michael.
You're not going to like this then, Jeremy. Because I'm going to tell a little secret about Jeremy. I think it's about time we reveal this. Because, you know, we're about 170 episodes in or something like that.
Yeah.
And Jeremy's real name isn't Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Jerem Baca. And we just call him Jeremy for short.
Oh, my God.
Jeremy, is the Star Wars franchise dead? I'm bringing back the Week in Geek.
Okay. That was a really long way to go to get to that, Michael. And Jerem Baca, that's the best you could do.
Well,
Salacious Hook, there, I did it for you.
Well, no, it harkens to that scene in Solo where they reveal how Chewie got his nickname.
I haven't seen Solo.
Oh, really?
No,
oh,
I have no desire to see that one. It's so to answer your question, for me personally, it's not dead. I don't care enough. And it's not a I'm too cool for school thing, because who knows how many times I've actually seen the original trilogy.
Right.
Just repeatedly as a child. Like, I know them backwards and forwards, both the originals and the unfortunate additions. But I think the tipping point for me came when both the fiance and I fell asleep during Rogue One.
Oof.
And neither one of us cared to pick back up. We're just like, do you want to start this over again? And like, nah, I'm good. And they're like, all right, cool. And we went about our day. It's like, I mean, the craft is there, I suppose. It's just,
right.
Much like the Marvel movies, it's just like, yeah, they're, if you care about the subject matter, even in the slightest, you know what you're getting. It's a known quantity. And for me, like, since I've gotten the movie pass, I've been kind of watching all the weird crap that I was on the fence about.
Oh, you got movie pass.
I did. I got it a while back.
Maybe you mentioned that before, but
so
yeah.
I think the only two movies that I've seen with movie pass that are like mainstream releases were Infinity War and, God, Infinity War. Maybe it might be the only one. As I get older, I find that I want to see weirder stuff, just because, like, I know what's going to happen in these movies, even if it's like you could tell from just the way that they had
marketed
and posited Infinity War that it was going to have an Empire Strikes Back tone to it. And it's a good movie. I don't mean to, like, say like I'm beating down on these things. Like, I've generally liked all of the Marvel movies, but Solo has made, what, like $400 million worldwide, and people are asking if Star Wars is dead? Come
well,
on.
Well, it lost money.
Has it really lost money?
It has, yes, yeah.
Really?
Because, yeah.
Cite your sources.
I have to Google them right now, then.
All
right,
because I'm at boxofficemojo.com, and worldwide it's made $386 million. And call me crazy, but I don't think it costs that much money to make. It could have easily broken 200 and add another 100 on top of that for marketing and whatever. But just because it's not turning a horrific profit does not mean it is a failure.
So you're forgetting that half of that has to go to the theaters.
True.
So you got to actually just cut that revenue in half. And so this is saying, this is from Variety.
Okay.
Analysts project Solo could end its run with approximately $400 million to $450 million in revenue, a dreadful result for a film that cost at least $250 million to produce and $150 million to promote.
I stand corrected. Okay.
It doesn't help that they kind of botched the film several times.
Yeah, didn't they, like, because it was the dudes who did Lego Movie, right?
I think so, yeah.
Warden Miller?
Yeah, and then something was wrong with, like, the tone of the movie, too funny, or not what the suits were looking for, so they brought on Opie. What's his name? Ron Howard.
Ron Howard.
Yeah.
This makes me sad, because I just don't care. Like, with these prequels, you know what happens.
Yeah.
It's like you know that Emilia Clarke, Woody Harrelson, Tandy Newton, Paul Bettany, and John Favreau as a voice are probably all going to die and or be shipped off to a prison somewhere.
Yeah, and everybody who is in any of the sequel, well,
exactly.
originals, yeah.
For the later installments chronologically.
Right.
It just feels like, who cares?
The thing, too, is that they have to... A lot of the movie is done explaining things that happened in the original trilogy.
Remember the Parsecs, remember?
Yes, yes. Yeah, they have to explain that, and they... Oh, this is how he got his blaster, and this is how, you know, all that stuff.
The Han Solo edition blaster?
And this is how Chewbacca got his nickname of Chewie, because Chewbacca was too hard to say, too long, so they shortened it to Chewie. That is actually spelled out in the movie.
Really?
Spoilers, by the way.
Oh, my God. Okay, so here are the four. I'm at my Letterboxd account, which is basically Facebook for movies. Here are the last several movies that I saw in theaters. I saw Hereditary.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned
Rocked,
that.
Yep. Original idea, great. I saw Isle of Dogs, awesome. I saw Annihilation, it rocked. I saw Mom and Dad, it's great. That's the one where Nick Cage and Selma Blair go crazy and try to kill their children. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's so good.
Is Cage in it?
Oh boy, is he Cage in it. At one point, he destroys a pool table with a sledgehammer while shouting the hokey pokey at the top of his lungs. And then it makes sense within the context of the story.
And that was not in the script. That was improv by... No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
It might have been. Like, I'm pretty sure him destroying the pool table has a point, but the hokey pokey, I don't know. But, like, I liked The Last Jedi quite a bit. For me, like I said with the Marvel movies, I know I've said it on the show, if the director is someone I like or the writer is someone I like, I'll probably go check it out.
That tends to be your guiding bolt.
Yeah, because I really liked Rian Johnson's movies. I like Looper, I like Brick, and I like The Last Jedi. I like the way he does things. It's not, he doesn't hold things sacrosanct. It's not what you expect, and I like that.
Hmm.
I liked Black Panther because it was Ryan Coogler, and I really like Creed and Fruitvale Station.
Well, yeah, good talk, Jeremy. It's always good to hear your takes on movies, and I think you have a healthy approach where you're not in the Memba camp, but you're also mm-hmm. not in the totally dismissive camp. You're like, well,
let's judge it on its merits, maybe.
Right.
Yeah,
yes. There you go.
Speaking of judging it on its merits, Michael.
Yes.
Something that I know is up your alley.
What's that?
Whether or not you've seen the show remains to be seen, but I'd be remiss if I did not bring up Glow. Season 2 is out on Netflix as of 2 days ago.
Ooh, continuing the Week in Geek. This is the... explain this. I know of this. This is about women's wrestling. Is it a scripted series? Is it a documentary? That I actually don't know.
It is a scripted... like three quarters comedy, one quarter drama. Episodes are half an hour, so it's a good, like, the fiance and I hammered through the first season yesterday. It's basically, so Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, Glow, was a real thing in the 80s.
Yeah, that's why I thought maybe it was a documentary or something like that. But
there
yes.
is a documentary on Netflix about Glow, but this is a semi-fictionalized version of it.
Okay.
Here's the color text, or a brief version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Allison Brie stars as Ruth Wilder, an out-of-work actress living in Los Angeles in the 80s. I suspect it's somewhere around like 85.
So it's kind of a period piece, too.
Yes. Wilder finds an unexpected chance at stardom. Enter the glitter and spandex-laden world of women's wrestling, where she must work alongside 12 other Hollywood misfits. Mark Maron plays the role of Sam Sylvia, a wash-up director of B-movies who tries to lead the group of women to fame.
Good role for him.
He's so good in that
it
show.
It seems like he fits that.
He's a very thinly veiled version of himself in the 80s, which is probably why he's so good at it, but he's so friggin' good in that show. And is made by the same people who did, or created, rather, by the same person who created Orange is the New Black.
Oh, okay.
And what I really like about the show is that A, it's funny. B, it has a respect for wrestling. It doesn't punch down.
Okay.
Which for me is clutch because we like wrestling.
Yeah.
There are a number of faces you're going to recognize should you ever get to this. Johnny Mundo shows up briefly.
Oh, really?
The Funkasaurus is in there.
Really?
Carlito is in there with really big hair. I think Joey Ryan shows up at one point. I mean, I can go on. So it's first season is 10 episodes. It's 5 hours of your day.
Oh, that's...
You will love it.
I have heard of it, and I never really looked into it too much, but to hear a little more about it, and it's definitely sounds very appealing now.
And all the characters are portrayed as actual people, and not just, like, one-dimensional stereotypes played for laughs.
Okay.
Oh, and Awesome Kong is in the show.
Oh, that's great.
In like a main role. She's really good. She plays, I mean, so Awesome Kong is an African-American wrestler who plays a a character whose show persona is a character of Welfare Queen, a heel who lives off the fat of the American government. Yeah, it was the 80s. I mean,
that could have probably actually happened in the 80s.
They made Sergeant Slaughter an Iraqi sympathizer in 1991, okay?
Right, yeah.
And that was the mainstream version. Who knows what wild crap was going on the outskirts. But I watched two episodes of season two today. Go watch it. It's really good.
Jeremy, well, I'm going to bring up an old segment we haven't done in a long time.
Mm.
The podcast pitch.
Ah, yes.
And I just wanted to throw out shout-outs to a couple podcasts that I've been listening to.
Film Spotting.
One is called... Well, yeah, let's do that. Dave's of Thunder is back. After 7 years.
7 long years.
50 episodes or so.
63, Michael. 63.
Yes, 7 years ago. It ended in 2011, and now it's back.
I'm so happy.
David Feeney.
Feeney. Damashek.
A writer in Hollywood, and yet Dave Damashek,
personality analyst.
Personality, comedian.
He works on the NFL Network and does a rather amusing podcast on the NFL Network where he's like the weird guy who demands that he gets the salad bar or the soup bar named after him at the NFL headquarters cafeteria, or during the Super Bowl's press day asks the players if it's a must-win game, which is pretty funny.
I don't know. The dynamic between these two guys is just hilarious. It's real. Sometimes you can't tell when they're just BSing and telling the truth.
They blur the lines quite successfully.
They blur the lines, and it's really good. And yeah, so if you weren't into that before, it's worth checking out again.
Part of the reason why I enjoy that show so much is that... So each episode is, you'd say, roughly an hour, right? Maybe a little over, maybe a little under sometimes.
Yeah.
That they're able to create their own little universe, complete with its own language. Like,
yeah.
I can't describe...
Feeneyisms and Damashekisms, if
Shekeries? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's only 60-some-odd episodes so far, I would recommend going back to the beginning for anything, but just go listen. Start with episode 6, and you'll get what you need to know. And it's great. Like the first run, like, frequently had me hyperventilating.
Now that I think about it, you called into the show.
I did call into the show,
but you got cut.
I'm on the show. They just cut parts of it out.
Oh, they just cut parts of it out.
Yeah, it's episode 50, I believe, is the one I'm on.
I'm gonna have to go back and listen to that again.
I don't want to. But I have started a re-listen of the show, and it holds up just as well as you'd think it would.
That's great. The other podcast I want to mention, too, is called Podcast The Ride. And this is three, I want to say they're kind of UCB associated guys in LA. So comedian types. So these guys are basically big fans of amusement parks and related. So like Chuck E. Cheese and Showbiz Pizza back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think they said if it has an animatronic, they'll discuss it on the show. They have guests on, and they just talk about various rides, various theme parks. Sometimes it's very broad. Sometimes it's very specific, like the episode that was about the Disneyland parking structure. but it's always pretty funny. Like, they always find a way to work humor into it. And even in the episodes that I don't know that much about the ride, they do a good job of explaining it. But they also, it's funny enough that you really don't need to know anything about what they're talking about. So it's good stuff, funny stuff. If you have any interest in theme parks, that also makes it great too, because they do a lot of research for the show and like going through YouTube clips of the ride in different decades so they can see what the changes were and stuff like that. Good podcast. Check that one out too. And thanks to Michelle for cluing me in on that podcast, The Ride.
Thank you, our friend Michelle.
Anyway, Jeremy, I think it's time. Well, wait. Should we do a quick errata before we go on to the FTR?
Yeah, go for it.
So we're talking about Brute IPAs last week.
Ah, yes.
And I think we kind of leaned heavy on the fact that they're like this rare thing that...
Have you heard of this new thing called brew pubs, Michael?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And then we both found out after the show that local breweries have them on tap here in each of our respective areas. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe it's not as... Like, it's definitely an emerging beer style, but it's not finding a cryptid in the woods or something like
that. I haven't seen any bottled yet.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing, too. I don't think it's any major distribution on it yet in bottles. So, but I, you know, and looking on Untappd, like, quite a few breweries had it listed, too. So, how many variants of I Am Brute that were on there? I think I saw that a few times.
Oh, really? Crap. Yeah. That made me I was so happy when I saw that.
Now, the next step, obviously, is to go out and try some of these local ones and report back, which hopefully we can do in the near future. So.
I agree. Keep your ears peeled. I make no promises, but maybe this coming episode? I don't know.
Okay, we'll see.
Well, Michael, it's time for the FDR.
That's right.
What is the FDR, Michael?
It's where we find a beer, drink a beer, and then we rate that beer with our heart.
We do rate with our hearts now. Allow me to introduce this one, Michael.
Okay.
So we're continuing the Sumerian Summer series, nothing to do with Conan the Barbarian. yeah. Michael, what do these things have in common? I'm going to list you off some movies here.
Okay.
And some of these are surprising based on a quick Google search. But we've got Event Horizon.
Okay.
We have South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. We have Little Nicky. We have Spawn. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger's 1999 Misfire, End of Days. And we have Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, yeah.
These things all have hell in them. And
that's right.
And that's what we're doing. We're doing Surly's Hell Lager.
That's right. I'm seeing multiple sources of flavor text here. Let's do the can first. Okay. Finally, a surly beer my German mother will drink. She says this one tastes like a beer from back home.
I-E-R.
Yes, beer with I-E-R. Not unlike a Zwickel beer from Germany, Hell is fermented with lager yeast and not filtered. American hops take a backseat to the Pils malt sweetness and the fresh bread aroma. This color is, well, Hell. Deutsch for light. It's fiendishly drinkable, and you don't have to sell your soul to get another. On their website. So this is brewed year-round, though, and it is apparently brewed for wanting more out of your fizzy yellow beer.
Which is always a noble cause, no pun intended.
And once again, they state, Hell is German for light, a pale cold lager with bready malt aromas and flavors, floral hop aroma, and a balanced finish.
How floral do we think these hops are? Are they just saying that because it sounds good?
I don't know.
We'll find out, but...
Yes, the hops are Sterling. Yeah. The malt is Pilsner and Karahel.
That sounds awesome.
ABV of 5, German lager yeast. IBU is just listed as low. And then there's a little like story here of somebody from Germany liking this beer or something like that.
It's pretty much the same thing we've already read. I'm also
right. So yeah, let's open it. It's in a 16-ounce can, 1 pint. So I have my Imperial pint glass or a thing here.
I also have an Imperial pint glass.
Great minds think alike, Jeremy. Now, interestingly enough, we ran into this the last beer. First of all, this is really foamy. I might have poured it incorrectly. But
yeah, mine overflowed a little bit too.
But it's very clear for being unfiltered, which was that last week we ran into that?
Was that the Hefe?
Yeah. Remember it was like, oh, it's the unfiltered version. And we're like, is it?
Oh, yeah, the American version of a German classic.
Yes.
I'm still proud of that.
You should do punch-up on some of the flavor text. Because this is pretty clear.
It is.
I can see my fingers on the other side. Maybe there's a little slight haze in there. A
little flocculent.
My eyeball is touching the glass to see that, but...
So I wonder if that's a byproduct of the lager yeast.
I was just going to say that, yeah. Sits on the bottom there and chills, quite literally. Jeremy, did you just go in?
I did because I had to make room.
Okay. Let me talk about the aroma real quick.
My pour was poorly. Go for it.
There is slight, maybe a little floral hop.
It's a little floral.
Maybe a little earthy.
A little grassy, a little open rangey.
Yeah, but it's not overpowering or anything. It's you really have to get your nose in there and mm-hmm. take a big whiff. But what are you thinking so far, Jeremy?
As far as the smell or...
If you want to go for the taste, go for the taste.
It's a... you go in and I will color things up here to the best of my abilities. It's a very pleasing yellow beer.
Yeah, it's a little more bitter than I thought it would be.
That is impressive. I was trying to put my finger on that, yeah.
That's a little hoppier than I thought, than I was expecting.
Do you know anything about Sterling hops?
I don't. Is that going to be to the internet to figure out what's going on with that?
I'm doing that right now.
All
right.
I wonder if that Hop Chronicles has anything on it. I'll check that website specifically.
Well, I'm going to YCH Hops to figure out what's going on. An aroma hop. Sterling, bred in 1990 and released in 1998. Sterling is an aroma variety with noble hop characteristics. It shows moderate tolerance to powdery mildew and has a good pickability of compact cones. That tells me nothing. Aroma. Specific aroma descriptors include noble and spicy. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's sort of in between that the Pilsner-y snap of a Czech Saaz, but it's also got a little grassy note to it, I think.
Yeah.
I always feel like such a clown saying note.
I was going to say, I think it's apropos.
It is, but I mean...
I was going to say this tastes almost like more of a Pilsner type beer than like a clean lager. Like, if you had Pilsner on the label, I'd be like, yeah, this is Pilsner-y.
I don't think it's spicy enough to be a Pilsner.
And probably they don't use Pilsner. Oh, they do use Pilsner malts. Oh, interesting.
And Cara Hell, which is weird. I'm going to look that one up.
I'm assuming that's similar to Cara Pils, but so it's probably offering mouthfeel more than anything, if I had to guess. Yeah, I'm seeing on another hopping website about hops, brewdudes.com, with a dash in there, that this is a...
Thank you, Michael.
...has been mentioned as a... suitable alternative to Saaz hops or Saaz.
Yeah. So it's not as spicy as a Saaz hop.
It's not, right. When I think of Saaz, I think of which one? Duvel. That one that you shared.
Yeah.
That
one time
in a blind man. And that was nicely spicy. This one is a little more earthy.
Cara Hell. 11 Lovibond imparts a full round malt flavor and gold color. Very versatile. Use up to 15% in pale ale, Oktoberfest, Maibock, and Hefeweizen. So it seems like just a standard...
light malt.
A light German malt.
Yes.
And to be specific.
Right. You said how many Lovibond?
11.
Oh, 11.
Which is...
So, yeah.
Yeah, pretty light.
That's on the light side, yeah. When you think... it pretty much runs... I mean, you can probably go as dark as you want, but practically it runs from like 5 to 200... or so, the Lovibond scale. Like the super roasty ones that are just like 200 or something.
Well, yeah, 400 Lovibond. But if you use that only for your beer, it would just taste like an ashtray.
Sure.
This is a very drinkable beer.
Yeah, it's nice.
I'm not. It is nice. How does this go on the yard work scale, Michael?
I think the hoppiness, as far as being a lawnmower beer, does it a bit of a disservice.
A little bit, I can see that.
You want something usually a little more cleaner, or if you want a kind of an added flavor, I would veer more towards the fruitedness side, if that makes any sense, versus like adding any hop character.
It needs something besides a hop to cut the noise out, for lack of a better word. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a Steve Lawnmower beer, as he championed founders.
PC Pills?
PC Pills, yeah.
It's a good beer. I like that one. I agree with him wholeheartedly.
Which is what sparked the discussion.
I will also have a PC Pills after he mows his lawn.
You're going to watch him?
Yeah.
On the inside?
Yeah, it's too hot.
Wave.
I have a broken arm. I can't do anything.
We'll get you a rider.
The vibrations are too much. Plus, you know, it's a plate. I don't know.
They'll knock the screw loose.
Loose. This is hard to describe.
Right. It's pretty straightforward.
It's a classy version of a yellow beer.
Right. Or like Pilsner, I don't want to say Pilsner Light, but Pilsner adjacent.
A Helles beer, Michael?
It doesn't remind me of a Helles beer, though.
What is the Zwickel beer? Have you ever heard of that? I want to look that.
I have, actually, and I've had one before. I can't remember where it was from, but...
Germany?
I was down in St. Louis And somebody had one, but it's, to me, it's more, it's not as, it wasn't as hoppy as this one is. To me, this is just too much, almost too much of a Pilsner. Cause like I've had Halles beer in Germany and it, it's just, I'm saying the word cleaner, but this one, it's not like a dirty beer. It's just more, not as hoppy.
When you say cleaner, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. I feel like you mean it's crisper. It has,
yes.
It's more, it's got a sharp flavor. It might not be a strong flavor, but it's in, it's out, boom, bang, bang, boom. It doesn't linger on the palate like a porter would.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yes.
You're welcome.
Yeah, crisper, sharper, very good adjective.
Zwickel beer. The term Zwickel beer refers to a weaker and less full-flavored variant of Keller beer.
Which is a beer you keep in the cellar.
It is. It is a type of German beer which is typically neither clarified nor pasteurized. Can be either top or bottom fermented. Translates to cellar beer, referring to its cool lagering temperatures. Its recipe probably dates to the Middle Ages. In comparison with most of today's filtered and pasteurized lagers, Keller beer contains more of its original brewing yeast as well as vitamins held in suspension, so it's good for you. As a result, it is distinctly cloudy and is described by German producers as Naturtrüb, or naturally cloudy. That's what trub means?
No.
Awesome.
Anyway. Okay, I'm learning something.
Yeah. I'm going to try and find versions. Bitburger is a Keller beer.
Oh, there you go. That's a pretty widespread.
Franziskaner. I just had one of those.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think that was in one of the beer gardens I went to in Germany.
I would hope so. That's a good beer.
Yeah.
But let's get back to this one. The hopping is weird. Please discuss.
So it's not, like, bad, but it's just different than what I pictured. And, yeah, that hopping, like, even as I'm talking now, I can taste the hops on my palate. And I wouldn't, like, expect that from, like, a, like we said, a crisp, sharp, cleaner lager
yellow
type beer. Right. Not necessarily, like, yellow beer and, like, domestic.
No, just some sort of yellow beer.
Yeah, yeah. In the purest sense of the term. I've kind of had to adjust my how I'm rating this based on the fact that, to me, it's more of a Pilsner than what I was expecting as a Helles lager. But
I think it's somewhere in between, personally.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not, like, spot-on Pilsner, but it is... to have any of that in there kind of surprised me a little bit, so...
I'd like to get one of those... You've seen the world of, or the beer world map, right?
I think so. Is this the one that you have a pint glass of or something? Or is that the beer table of elements?
No, it is sort of the one that I have a pint glass of where it's like, it has like ale, lager, and then offshoots of, and then it's like pale ale.
Taxonomy kind of.
Yeah, thank you. But there is also a website that was, it was some sort of, it was like World of Beers or something like that where you could like sail a little boat around and go.
Yeah, I think you talked about this before.
Yeah.
We need to find that to kind of.
God, I wish I remembered what that was. But you could like go around like, all right, now you've traveled from Keller beer to Zwickel beer. And it would like tell you the differences between it. But I can't for the life of me remember what it was. And apparently there's a lot of crappy World of Beer places.
I was going to say, that's an unfortunate... Because I think that's a chain of brew pubs.
It seems like it.
Let's get into... Should we get into ratings?
Let's do it, Michael.
I can go first.
Sounds good.
Take a quick sip of judgment here. Not bad, different than what I expected, but still not bad. As advertised, easy to drink, though, and good for the summer. Yeah. I'm going to give it a nice, solid 3.5.
The more I have this one, the more the hops are grinding on me. It's
a
little sweet, and the bitterness doesn't quite cut through it, and they don't play off one another like I would prefer. It's very drinkable, as we have established.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the individual parts, but the whole doesn't really come together for me, so I'm going to give it a 2.75.
Oh, okay. That's a very astute observation, even though our ratings might not match.
Yeah.
I like the way you said that at the end there. But I think also, before we get into my next bit here, think we need to get some more Surly on the show, too.
I agree. They make fine
beer.
They
have some good ones, yes. This is the first one we've had in a long time. Actually, I don't even know if we've had them on before.
Done Furious before?
Oh, yeah, that's probably it.
Okay.
Yeah, Surly, that was 107.
Gotcha.
So, over a year ago. So just looking at the ratings of the Sumerian Summer Series beers, I think we're kind of going to change it up next week in some way or another. So, the Sumerian Summer Series is over, I guess, to put it bleakly. Although summer continues. So we had our Voodoo Ranger Juicy Haze IPA, and that we gave that an average of 3.88. We had the Lemon Trail, which got an average of 4. We had the Magic Hat Circus Boy, which got a 3.88, and now we have Surly, which gets a 3.13 average. Lemon Trail, the winner, apparently, although...
I'm okay with that.
It's kind of comparing apples and oranges, but...
lemons and turnips?
Yes. Nice. But that was a good one, so I have no qualms about that.
That was a very good beer.
Yeah, that was cool. But all of them have their own little merits and own little things to enjoy. So
agreed. None of these are bad. Like, I would like to point out that while the good old Potosi benchmark may be 3.0, average is still 2.5.
Yes, right. Oh, yeah, exactly.
This one's just not hitting me today.
Right. Right.
Maybe it's because I was inside watching, like, I think we watched 12 episodes of Glow this weekend. I don't know.
So you needed like a Schlitz or something from the 80s to continue your mood.
God, they do. They drink some sort of grody beer in one episode. It's towards the end of the series. Once again, the season. I feel like it's Budweiser, which is not as grody as I had led you all to believe. But I feel like there's another scene where Mark Maron is hammered and drinking something that just looks repulsive.
So that's another one down the gullet. In any case,
if
you want to get in touch, you can do so in a variety of ways on Twitter and Facebook, APMPod at both those places. Emails directly, APMPod@gmail.com. Also, you can follow us on Untappd. We're host Emeritus Mike. Keeps up with all of our ratings there. Thank you, Mike, keeper of the Untappd. I think we're legally contracted to say that as well. Rate, review, subscribe if you can. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Tell somebody. That's good, too. But I think that will do it. So for Jeremy, Baca, I've been Michael.
God. For Michael, I've been Jeremy. Then this has been American Pale Males. Cheers.
Cheers.